Good afternoon, everyone. I really do think that if I would have sat here long enough and all of the people that could have shared would have shared, I wouldn't have had to give this sharing. I promise you that if you look at the Word document, it was saved this afternoon at about 2 o'clock. But everybody that shared had a piece of this talk. And just as Bill got up and shared last week, and Martha heard and was the person that Bill shared about, God is continuing to affirm in us that he's here and that he's working by, just listen and you'll hear. Neil, you're going to just, I just can't believe you said what you said. Okay. For those of you who don't know, we are in the middle of studying the joy of the gospel. It is this letter. It's an encyclical that the Holy Father wrote. And we are doing 10-minute presentations at the end of prayer meeting. And this one is the fifth one. The first one, Sharon shared, and she introduced the introduction, and she exhorted us to pray for a renewed personal encounter with Jesus and for the grace to respond to our Holy Father's exhortation to spread the joy of the gospel to three principal groups. The first group, members of our local church. The second group, the baptized who have fallen away. And the third group, to those who do not know Christ or those who have rejected him. Then Larry talked about chapter 1, and he exhorted us to purposefully pursue someone in one of those categories. In chapter 2, the Holy Father sets up the rest of the document. So chapter 2 is pivotal because what he does is he says that he gives kind of a state of the world address in which this gospel must be spread. He divides the chapter into two parts, and last week we talked about the state of the culture of our world, the state of the globe, in other words. And this week we're going to talk about the state of the heart of the individual pastoral worker, which we are a part of that group. And think about the heart in the sharings we've had tonight about the heart. So first he sets up, he says that he defines who a pastoral worker is, and he says that it's both the ordained or the consecrated as well as the laity. And then he affirms and he acknowledges those people. So if the Pope were here, he would tell us that he is grateful for what we've done for the church around the world. And he said that people, which we are about part of that group, who are working for Christ have had an enormous contribution in today's church. So I just want everybody to know that if the Pope were here, he would say that to us, and I humbly look out amongst each and every one of you, and I realize the effect that each of you have had, that each of you has sacrificed to spread the joy of the gospel already. And keep in mind, then, that Pope Francis has not forgotten all that has been accomplished, and neither should we. So strap yourselves in and buckle your seatbelts and see if any of this strikes a chord with you, because it did with me. So first of all, he says no to selfishness and spiritual sloth. So what is that? He says, today we are seeing among pastoral workers an inordinate concern for personal freedom and relaxation. He says, at a time when we most need a missionary dynamism with which to bring salt and light to the world, many lay people fear that they may be asked to undertake some apostolic work, and they seek to avoid any responsibility that might take them away from their free time. He says, even though they pray, so these people, all of us as pastoral workers are praying, we have a heightened sense of individualism, a crisis of identity, and a cooling of fervor. And then he also says that around the world, the church's message is met with a certain skepticism and cynicism. And so we feel the need to apologize for that. And although workers pray, remember he says we're a praying people, we develop a sort of inferiority complex, which leads to relativism and a tendency to conceal our Christian identity and devotions. And this is a vicious cycle because it weakens our spirit, stifles our joy, and drowns it out with the need to be more like everybody else. So we have to ask ourselves, in what ways do I cling too tightly to my free time? And have I developed an inferiority complex, giving in to the need to fit in and be more like everyone else? The next is to say no to sterile pessimism. He said, don't look, in paragraph 84, don't look to the prophets of doom that the end of the world is at hand. God is still turning water into wine, and the Holy Spirit is still in the world working as powerfully as he ever was. Even if our own personal light has grown dim, God is still reigning. Refute this next thing he says in this saying no to sterile pessimism is refuse to be a defeatist or a sourpuss. Now, I don't know what language the Pope wrote this in. He could have written it in Spanish, Italian, or Latin. But whatever he did, the word was translated into sourpuss. And we all can get an image of what that means. And this is what he said. And Neil, listen. He said, nobody can go off to a battle unless he is fully convinced of the victory beforehand. The evil spirit of defeatism is brother to the temptation to separate before its time the wheat from the weeds. It is the fruit of an anxious and self-centered lack of trust. The third thing he says, say yes to new relationships brought by Christ. Okay, y'all, this has CCGD written all over it. Listen to what he says. This could just be for us. And it isn't unlike the Lord to just say, okay, I'm going to do this for those folks in Dallas. He said, use communication advances toward the good. Use them to reach out in solidarity to others. To go out of ourselves and to join others is healthy for us. To be self-enclosed is to taste the bitter poison of immanence. And I had to look that word up, and it means remaining within. Immanence and humanity will be the worst for every selfish choice we make. He says in paragraph 88, encountering others is the only way to resist temptation to stick only to a close circle of friends. Paragraph 90, be with others in devotion. Don't just make all your prayer private. Paragraph 91, find Jesus in the faces of others and in their voices and in their pleas. And we must learn to suffer in the embrace of the crucified Jesus whenever we are unjustly attacked or met with ingratitude, never tiring of our decision to live in fraternity. Paragraph 92, live in fraternity. Fraternal love is capable of seeing the sacred grandeur of our neighbor. Let us not allow ourselves to be robbed of community. Those are Pope Francis's words, not mine. He then says no to spiritual worldliness. Our pastoral work must be solely for God's glory, not our own. And then he says a very complicated thing, but he says spiritual worldliness can be fueled by two deeply interrelated things. The first is Gnosticism, and the second, you don't have to look this up, self-absorbed Promethean Neo-Pelagianism. And basically, the bottom line of that is don't be a Pharisee or a Sadducee. Don't think that you know everything and that your way is the best And that he says then, a supposed soundness of doctrine or discipline leads to an authoritarian elitism, and instead of evangelizing others, it simply analyzes them and classifies them, and instead of opening the door to grace, one exhausts his or her energies by critical inspection of the other. The last thing he talks about is no to division. He said, we have too much to do to war against ourselves, either in our churches or within the Christian church or in the world in general. And he says, reconcile with each other and do it today. So the theme, I think, of this second chapter can be broken down into this, that evangelists must break free from the grip of selfishness, pessimism, individualism, worldliness, and division. I have just attempted to skim the surface of the second half of chapter 2. It covers 33 paragraphs, and that's a lot. One of the goals of these teachings is to encourage all of us to go deeper. And so I would encourage you all to get this book. They're on sale out in the foyer. Or if you don't want to do that, it can be downloaded for free from the internet. You can download sections. And if you don't know how to do that, or if your printer's out of ink, or if you don't have a printer, ask someone who does, and I'm sure they would be happy to do it for you. But because it's so rich, and because I don't want this particular part to go by the wayside and be caught up without further study, I have prepared, I took five quotes that we didn't have a lot of time to spend on, and these pages are out, or this piece of paper, a copy for you, is out on the table. I have put a line out in front of each of the numbers so that you can challenge yourself to check them off this week as you take them to your prayer time. Check off each one of these that you've contemplated, okay? I also would encourage you to just take the time in the name of fraternity to call a brother or a sister and talk about one of these, or go schedule a coffee, or ask someone over to your house for coffee and talk about one, or go for a walk and just chat about one of these or both of or all of these things, and just see how the Lord is speaking to us as a body, because I think it's very, very important. And I'm going to close with this story. As a child, my mom and dad used to love to go to antique stores. They would scour sales, and they'd put all of us kids in the car, and we'd all go to these places and look at really old furniture. And they especially loved wood furniture. And my dad would always point out solid wood pieces that had superior craftsmanship. He just had an eye of knowing what was built well. And they'd often buy old chairs or tables or dressers, and they would bring them home to restore them. And what was involved in that would be stripping off old paint or varnish or finish or stain that had been put on to get down to the original wood. Paint was always the worst because it was so hard to remove that without hurting the wood beneath. I remember one time they bought three pieces and took a furniture and brought them home, and they found it impossible to get all the layers off. So they took it to this professional place that literally had a vat of chemicals, and they dipped the piece of furniture into this vat, and all of the paint and all of the layers of varnish were stripped off, and the wood was beneath it. They brought it home and they refinished it. I'm saying all this, I promise I'm going to get to a point. Currently, my dad is helping to restore a train car at a train museum in Frisco, and it was the train car of Harry Truman. It was his state car that he used on his presidential campaign. And because it wasn't taken care of, there were holes in the roof of this car, and it sat outside for years and years and years, and it was damaged by the rain. But it was originally a beautiful car of solid mahogany. And my dad showed me last night this door that he had stripped down to the original wood and that he had stained with mahogany, and it was absolutely stunning. I think that we can use this analogy to examine ourselves as pastoral workers. First, the Lord has made us solid. We are made of superior wood, and his craftsmanship is impeccable. All of us have lived a lot of life, and we've been covered with color and paint and varnish for years. And each rendition of ourselves, I'm sure, has been beautiful. But sometimes, and I think Lent is an excellent time, we are called to take stock, and we're called to strip away at the layers that have been built up and get down to the raw wood so that the Lord can begin again anew. So the Pope closes with challenges, with what I'm going to close with exactly what I did last week because it's the end of chapter 2. He says, challenges exist to be overcome. Let us be realists without losing our joy, our boldness, or our hope-filled commitment. Let us not allow ourselves to be robbed of our missionary vigor.